why did you leave? Why make me grieve? Am I to suffer this way? Will I ever breathe a sigh? Please, darling, won't you try to believe me when I said I was wrong? Dark shadows over me, nothing but misery. I can't escape, it's so true. I just can't hide my foolish pride, baby. I'm still in love with you.
Fermilla Rowe and John Etheridge. And now, here on BBC Radio 3, it's time for Julian Joseph with Jazz Lineup.
It's an instrument that I fell in love with it early on. I gravitated to it. You probably had a toy xylophone with the different colored notes when you were a little kid, but you, being a normal human being, probably stopped at two or three, and I just didn't. I just kept going, you know? It's a beautiful sounding instrument. It's an instrument that you can play, walk up to it with no experience, and play one note, and it sounds beautiful.
The sound and thoughts of tonight's featured artist and the fleet hands of American jazz man Joe Locke on vibraphone. Well, Joe Locke plays with a gargantuan energy and technique along the lines of vibraphone hero Bobby Hutcherson. He exudes enthusiasm and excellence and graced the jazz lineup stage at the Glasgow Jazz Festival with his quartet, which is our featured concert performance, so stay tuned for that later on the show. Also coming up, I'll be getting inside the mind of British musical wonder Jacob Collier. He's captivated the unequivocal support of legendary producer-arranger Quincy Jones, who features in this year's BBC Proms and is also our very special guest on Jazz Lineup in a couple of weeks' time. We'll hear tracks from Jacob's debut album, In My Room, and also hear his thoughts on his artistic process and what makes him tick.
I was never really given any lessons for the instruments which I played, but I was absolutely encouraged to be as creative as I could be with the instruments that surrounded me in the house. Obviously, the most ready of all those instruments is the human voice, so I was always singing from when I was extremely little. I was always singing.
Let's ride with the family down the street, through the car to see your friends to feed.
Jacob Collier, and more from Jacob later on the show. First up, one of Joe Locke's favourite contemporary vibes players, Warren Wolfe, who shares similar influences, technical dexterity, and the ability to conjure an attractive intensity. Wolfe's latest recording features a heavyweight cast of players, including pianist Brad Meldow, drummer Jeff Tane Watts, and Christian McBride, who played bass and produced the album. This is Cell Phone.
Thank you.
Aaron Wolf using both marimba and vibes in his melodic texture, and that was Cell Phone from the album Convergence. The album also features guitar favourite John Scofield and is out on the Mac Avenue label. And stay tuned for more vibraphone action later on the show with Joe Locke as part of tonight's featured performance. Well, from the vibes of a young American to a Dane based in Britain, and the power behind one of the finest trios to hail from the UK, is bassist, composer and bandleader Jasper Hoiby, who untethers himself from Phrenesis to explore music featuring the horns of BBC Radio 3 new generation jazz artist Laura Jerd and Mark Lockhart. This is Fellow Creatures. Thank you. Fellow Creatures from Danish bass man Jasper Højby, who describes this album as his opportunity to explore composition and texture outside of his trio Phrenesis. Also, it quenched his desire to write for trumpeter Laura Jerd and saxophonist Mark Lockhart, in addition to the piano of Will Barry and Scotsman Corey Dick on drums. We heard the title track of the album, Fellow Creatures, which is out on the Editions label. This is Julian Joseph with Jazz Lineup, and you're listening to the very best of jazz from the UK and beyond, right here on BBC Radio 3. Groove-laden earthiness of the Pyramids, led by saxophonist and multi-instrumentalist Idris Akamor. Akamore connects to the creations of Sun Ra and the Art Ensemble of Chicago, his hometown. His band, The Pyramids, was formed in Paris in 72, recording three albums until they disbanded in 77. Even though Akamore revived The Pyramids over the years, the resurgence in vinyl and new collectors and fans has led to a new incarnation of the band and the recording of We Be All Africans, which is out on the Strut Records label. Well, it's time for our featured artist, American vibraphonist Joe Locke. Now, Locke plays with authority, sensitivity, and an ecstatic virtuosity, underpinned by his irrepressible energy. His jazz credentials were forged early on, having played with master trumpet legend Dizzy Gillespie and Cuban percussion maestro Mongo Santa Maria while still in high school. As a professional, he's formed significant alliances with many great artists, including pianist Kenny Barron, vocalist Diane Reeves, and trumpeter Eddie Henderson. A featured soloist with symphony orchestras, he's even worked with pop rap artist The Beastie Boys. Over the past decade, his work with pianist Jeffrey Keyser and UK sax man Tim Garland for their Storms Nocturnes band has been particularly distinguished. Locke is no stranger to the UK and Scotland in particular, as his musical association with saxophonist and director of the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra, Tommy Smith, is well established. Recorded on the jazz lineup stage at St. Luke's, a renovated church next to Glasgow's legendary Barrowlands Ballroom, as part of the 30th anniversary edition of the City's Festival. Locke featured an international group with Scotsman Alan Cosker on drums, Sardinian pianist Alessandro Diliberto, and American bassist Daryl Hall. Before we hear the first piece, here's Joe, who caught up with jazz lineup's Kevin Legendre at the festival.
How long does it take to actually develop a technique whereby you can move at speed across the keyboard when you have those four spikes? It's almost as if you become some sort of X-Man with these spikes coming out of your knuckles like that. Because I'm intrigued by the way that vibraphone players move so quickly without the mallets that they're not using getting in the way.
It's also a thing of being able to quickly open and close the mallets to the distance you need. And it's a really strange thing, man. You get to a point where you practice and practice. I remember when I started playing with this, your particular grip I'm using, I was already working professionally, and I would play because I didn't have the strength to hold all four. And so I would play on the gig at night. I would play with two mallets. And then at home, I would practice and practice and practice. And eventually, I got to the point where I had the strength to always hold four and learn how to open and close them very quickly and play scales very quickly up and down the instrument. And now I'm at a point where my accuracy is horrible unless I'm holding four. When I'm only holding two, something feels naked and my accuracy goes out the window. So it's sort of a weird thing that happens is you home becomes the four mallets and the foreign place is only holding two. And I'm really good with chopsticks. I don't want to brag.
I think you and the rest of us, yeah, but we're not really good with vibraphones, so it doesn't quite work.
Thank you.
The Joe Locke Quartet and No Mo by saxophone great Sonny Rollins, and that's the name of the tune. And slightly misleading, as there will be more from Joe and the band performing at the Jazz Festival in Glasgow later on the show. But over to one of Britain's most creative pianists and composers, who releases her long-awaited debut, a solo piano recording featuring a diverse set of original compositions, some familiar to fans of her excellent trio Infinitum and larger group Infinitum Plus. I'm speaking of Nikki Yeo. Nikki has worked in a myriad of settings with singers Jaleesa Anderson, Misha Paris and Cleveland Watkiss, with whom she recorded the album Mutual Serenade. She worked with saxophonist Courtney Pine early in her career and also American hip-hop mavericks The Roots. In fact, I heard her play an impromptu set with my jazz lineup colleague Claire Martin for the excellent Weekend Arts College in Hampstead. Nikki devotes a great deal of time to teaching, and it's great to see this fine musician more frequently doing her own concerts. This is Elderflower and Ivy. The pensive and thoughtful piano of Nicky Yeo with Elderflower and Ivy from her debut album Solo Gemini, out on the Infinitum label. Now to the latest precocious talent on the block, another debut and solo of a different kind, this time on multiple instruments. Yes, it's Jacob Collier. Now, Jacob appeared on the scene as a teenager, posting some of the most engaging and exciting vocal arrangements of familiar songs on the web, in the image of Hi-Lo's and Singers Unlimited creator and arranger Gene Perling. Now, Perling's influence on outstanding American vocal group Take Six sparked the imagination of the young British vocalist and multi-instrumentalist who now is making positive musical waves across the globe. Jacob, now 21, has courted the great and the good on the contemporary music scene, recording with British pianist Jason Rebello, fusion supergroup Snarky Puppy, and opening at last year's Montreux Jazz Festival for piano legends Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea. I was very fortunate to attend his own concert at this year's Montreux Jazz Festival, performing solo with a huge array of instruments, singing and playing with infectious confidence, rewarded with the most enthusiastic reception. So let's get inside the mind of Jacob Collier.
My name is Jacob Collier, and I am a singer and multi-instrumentalist from London, England. There was a time when I was about 2 years old, my mama would rock me on her lap whilst playing Bach on her violin. That was quite a sort of stupendous introduction to some of the ideas of voice leading and harmony and everything, but primarily just kind of emotion. So I was exposed to how that music felt to exist within it, like right inside that music, and that was probably one of my earliest memories, which has stayed with me all this time. I was never really given any lessons for the instruments which I played, but I was absolutely encouraged to be as creative as I could be with the instruments that surrounded me in the house. Obviously, the most ready of all those instruments is the human voice, so I was always singing from when I was extremely little. I was always singing.
Take me anywhere you want to go. You know that my love is strong in my heart. The calm that follows storm. Find what I've been searching for all along in my heart away.
Piano would be where I would gravitate towards for harmony and also for groove and everything, because I think the harmony is quite a far-reaching instrument when it comes to music in general. I suppose I was introduced to the idea of recording technology, having been presented with the music program Cubase at the age of about 6 or 7, and that became one of my primary instruments, actually, because it was a place where I could combine everything that I kind of understood about music up until that point in one place, and I learnt one hell of a lot from just recording and multi-tracking and layering and everything from the instruments around the house in that world there.
There will be a place for me to go in my heart away.
Music was always a massive part of growing up. I don't believe I ever really made a decision to do music as a career. It was something which transpired, sort of tumbled into existence, bearing in mind that there was nothing really else that I would ever truly love to do in the same way. So I believe that when someone dedicates enough time to a craft, whatever that craft is, and approaches that with love and care and time and dedication and, you know, a lot of love in that world, I believe that is something that it's possible to become a sort of master at that skill in one way or another, because I think that mastery, as weird a word as that sounds, I think that comes from just a lot of time and a lot of thought and a lot of love. So, you know, I wouldn't say by any stretch of the imagination that I am a master, but I would say that I have encouraged parts of my mind to grow and to continually experiment with things that I've seen around me my entire life long, and that is something which I didn't really see a reason to stop doing. So it's something that I've ended up being lucky enough to be able to do all day long. So there are many instruments in my house, but I would say that in some ways my primary instrument is my room, which has always been my sort of playground ever since I was very, very little. It was the place where the piano lived, and it was the place where many of the instruments lived, and where music was the most alive in the house. And I mean, there really was music in every corner of the house growing up, but that room has always been very, very special to me. And there was a moment, I believe, in my early teens where that room, having originally been the room that was my mother's teaching room, became so much my playground that my mum had to actually kind of jump ship to the room in the front of the house so that I could, you know, fully expand on my own imagination and really kind of invest in it, you know, at that age of about 11 or 12. That has ended up being where I feel musically one of my most productive, more so than sitting in front of one instrument on its own. Because, you know, when I'm in that room, I love to think about sound. It's more difficult to be taught about sound from a teacher than it is to be taught about how to play an instrument. But I think that I've listened to so much music and always been so fascinated by the idea of sound that that has always been at the forefront of what it means to make music for me. So, you know, for example, if I'm making a groove, I might think of it of a strange recipe for how to create the sounds in that groove, as opposed to just playing it on the drum kit or something. It would be, I might, you know, knock on the floor or hit the side of a saucepan or do some weird clapping. And I think that the idea of sound is a huge one, and it's one that's often forgotten about with people who create music. And for me, you know, somebody like Brian Wilson absolutely epitomises the idea of somebody who understands and is adventurous with and extremely inventive with sound. And Brian Wilson, you know, draws upon all sorts of strange and wonderful objects and things like that in his world. You know, for an album like Pet Sounds, you hear, you know, sleigh bells and woodblocks and flutes and French horns and all these kinds of things that you wouldn't normally find on a pop album. So for me, that was a really important album that was a hugely inspiring piece of work.
But long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
So say there was a power cut on stage, and I've often thought about this because my one-man show setup, which I've developed with my friend Ben Bloomberg, it's so complex, and there are so many things that are going on stage, you know, looping machines and vocal harmonizers and samplers and strange new inventions and a massive video screen with 3D cameras and everything. It's a really exciting place to be. The thought of the power cut actually fills me with an immense amount of joy. I think that what technology should do is it should serve the music first. And this is something that I think a lot of people forget and don't realise when they are creating music or creating anything using technology, or even just living using technology, is that I believe that technology should be enhancing parts of our life which are real, as opposed to, you know, kind of filling holes of things that aren't real.
Woke up today, my mind a whirl from head to toe with endless feeling. Try to explain just what I see. You say to me, I must be dreaming. You call my name the way I wished you would in my imagination. Yeah.
Now every single thing around me filling me with this sensation. In my searching around, I've seen so many faces. Now I've found the one I needed, and the sun is rising. I woke up today like I wanted. Since you walked my way, from my strength to feeling, I woke up to heaven knows it. Found that girl who makes me
sing. So one of the crazy things about the internet is that a person with an idea can create something on his or her own, and that thing can travel all around the world into the most unexpected locations and into the most unexpected ears. And I think one of the most unexpected ears or pair of ears that has heard my music has been Mr. Quincy Jones, who is one of my all-time heroes and a true master and innovator of his craft. And actually not just one craft, but a whole array of different crafts. He's quite an astounding human being, really. But anyway, I uploaded a YouTube video, which I made in my room, of a Stevie Wonder song called Don't You Worry About a Thing. And I uploaded this in 2013 or 14, I think. And that found its way across the world in one night. It was one of these crazy kind of viral situations where I pressed, you know, the button which said, hey, share the video. And then I sort of went to sleep and woke up in the morning, and my inbox was quite a strange place to be, really, because I was looking around and there were these emails from you know, so many people that I had heard of and have loved for many years that I had never heard from before, like Quincy. And so Quincy and I jumped on Skype, which was extremely surreal, to say the least. He was it really was one of those I can't believe this is actually happening right now moments, in the best possible way. It was lovely. And essentially Quincy is at a point in his life where he doesn't really need to prove anything anymore, I think. But what he can do is he can invest and use his kind of experience and knowledge and connections to help people who are younger kind of create themselves a platform for their music or for their ideas. And so there's this wonderful situation where Quincy, obviously being one of the most loved and respected people in the industry, has taken it upon himself to find people who he really loves, a few younger people, and to give those guys a chance to exist under his wing for a while. And I'm lucky enough to be one of those people. I say one of the things I've learned the most about Quincy, or the times where I've learned the most from him, have been not when he's saying his extraordinary stories, or not when he's meeting with these extraordinarily famous people and things like this. It's when he's dealing with ordinary people, and he seems to have a real love and respect for culture and people of the world, and he seeks to access every single person he speaks with. He doesn't dismiss anybody, and you know, for me to see someone of that caliber and that stature in the world of the industry, be respectful and be loving towards the people of the world, I think is truly inspiring, and that's something that really has stayed with me a lot and will do forever. As a young boy growing up, singing was a huge part of my life, and the high treble voice of a young boy was a really big part of my life, because I was lucky enough to be able to participate in things like operas and things about, I suppose, between the ages of about 11 to 13. For example, I sang the role of Miles in an opera by Benjamin Britten called The Turn of the Screw, which is one of my absolute favourite pieces of music in the world. And Benjamin Britten's, you know, his use of harmony was truly kind of shattering to my mind at that point. And it was so extraordinary to see somebody paint with such emotion, you know, use harmony as such an emotional tool in a way that I'd never, ever seen before. It was really, really, you know, astonishing. And so singing was my number one until I was about 13, when obviously my voice eventually broke. And I ended up spending more and more time in that room just creating sounds. And what I found was that that room became my learning space. And I would learn by listening, I'd learn by playing with other people, I'd learn by exploring things that I had learned from people who had spoken about music to me. But most of all, I'd learn from myself. I'd learn from recording something and then thinking about how that made me feel. And if this beat was moved from here to here, you know, what that difference is emotionally. And I think it's huge. And I think that what I did is I became attentive to very, very small details in music, in addition to very large details in music. And that combination gave me a fairly overall sense of how music was connected to emotion. And I believe that's something right now in education, in music, but also elsewhere, that is truly missing. I believe that a lot of the time when somebody learns how to play an instrument, the idea of it being emotional, although it's something that people are aware of, it's difficult. And I think teachers need to be more aware of the fact that it should come entirely from that as a starting point, and that I think oftentimes the kind of technical aspects of music are concentrated upon with music, but less so the emotional parts. I believe it's also something that there's a sort of complicated thing where, you know, if I'm a teacher, I'd like to impart some knowledge onto a student who I believe would benefit from a certain piece of knowledge. But I think that one of the faults sometimes in education is that they are more imposed than implied knowledge pieces. And I think that often I can say from my own experience, having basically been self-taught for my entire life, that I've learned the most from seeds as opposed to flowers or something. I'm not sure what to say really, but I think that if someone plants a seed in my mind of this could exist, or I'm going to show you what exists around the thing, but you find the thing on your own and then I find it on my own, that is a piece of knowledge, a sort of gemstone which I can own, and that belongs to me, and for that reason it is actually relevant to my life, and I can draw upon my life when I'm using it. And that's for me that seems to have been a bit of a missing puzzle piece in the educational system sometimes, which I've been a part of, because although the teachers often know a huge amount about the music, more powerful and more interesting and more important than all of the things that they know is finding a way to communicate the things to a student, a young person, for them to actually own those things and understand them, but not only that, but actually find them themselves. That's my take on music education in general. I went to the Royal Academy of Music as a junior from the age of 16 to 18 on the Saturday jazz course, which was absolutely fantastic because I was surrounded for the first time by young people who were interested in jazz music. And at that time, I was actually only really just discovering jazz for the first time in a major way, because before then I'd been really interested in, you know, songs, and I've been interested in classical music, and I've been interested in harmony and rhythm and things like this. But to see all of these things, you know, including improvisation, all of these parts of my musical understanding come together in jazz for the first time was truly wonderful. But that as a way of learning was fantastic, because it was more that we'd be exposed to things, you know, exposed to tunes, exposed to musicians, exposed to harmonies, exposed to grooves, weird time signatures and things like this, and each other, enough to plant seeds that we would then grow in our own time. I can't remember who said this to me, but someone once said to me that education is something that other people do for you, but then learning is something that you do for yourself.
A very switched on young artist, Jacob Collier, and Don't You Know, sharing his wisdoms and allowing us to know his room as his instrument, and the importance of sound, his love for the Beach Boys, composer Benjamin Britten, with the poignant insights on education too. And Jacob's album, In My Room, is out now on Quest Records, and you can see Jacob perform at this year's proms in Prom 49, which is the Quincy Jones prom, and that takes place on the 22nd of August, and you'll also be able to listen to the performance right here on BBC Radio 3. And also listen out for a special edition of Jazz Lineup I recorded in Switzerland at the 50th edition of the Montreux Jazz Festival with Quincy Jones. That will be broadcast on August the 13th. Next up, something from superb vocalist, composer and technologist with direct and spiritual connections to Jacob's broad-based intelligent thinking and creative process. Yes, it's vocalist Cleveland Watkiss, who's evolved his own live looping techniques to build unique, interesting musical soundscapes. This is Sata Masagana. ¡Gracias!
da 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 da. There is a land far, far away, where there's no night, there's only day. Look into the book of life and you will see that there's a land far, far away. That there's a land far, far away. The King of Kings and the Lord of Lords sit upon his throne, and he rules us all. Look into the book of life and you will see that he rules us all. That he rules us all. Ba ba ba.
Ba 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 ba
From Cleveland Watkiss vocal suite album, that was Satamasagana, out on the As Music label. And Cleveland will be featured on our special program from the Edinburgh Festivals on the 20th of August. Well, shortly we'll be returning to our featured artist and to the music of Joe Locke, recorded at the 30th edition of the Jazz Festival in Glasgow. He starts this segment of the set with David Raxin's Laura from the film of the same name. But before we get to the music, let's rejoin Joe with Kevin Legendre at the festival.
This amazing instrument, the vibraphone, which I think for a lot of people is still a little bit of a mystery because it's not that common in jazz. Tell us about this instrument.
It's an instrument. You probably had a toy xylophone with the different colored notes when you were a little kid, but you, being a normal human being, probably stopped at two or three, and I just didn't. I just kept going, you know? It's a beautiful sounding instrument. It's an instrument that you can play, walk up to it with no experience, and play one note, and it sounds beautiful. And, of course, to master it, it's frustrating. It takes a lifetime. But just to get a beautiful sound out of it right out of the gate is something rare in musical instruments. And I think you're right. It's still a rare instrument, I think, just because of the fact that it's rather unwieldy. But I'm really heartened to see a new generation of vibes players coming along. It used to be that there were vibes players, but they didn't quite play the sort of intellectual finesse and mastery of other instruments. But that's all changing. And there are some great young players coming along who are really, I'd say, upping the bar overall about the instrument. So we're going to see more and more young people who are crazy enough to play the instrument and play it really well, you know.
The instrument is very percussive. Obviously, you've got the mallets, yeah, which enable you to attack it. You're hitting, yeah, the instrument. Yeah. So I suppose it's an obvious parallel with a drum kit as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've got a tuned keyboard.
Right.
And you also, a lot of people might not be aware of this, you have a motor as well,
right,
inside this little cabinet.
And it makes the sound vibrate. That's actually why it's a vibraphone. And it creates this beautiful sort of vocal vibrato to the sound. There's an interesting story, actually, about when Milt Jackson was playing the vibes in his early days, one of the masters of the vibraphone. They only had one-speed vibraphones, and it was a fast motor. And Milt would actually jam things, popsicle sticks or combs or pencils, into the motor to slow it down. Of course, breaking the motor, but creating the sound he was looking for. And I think that kind of destruction is a creative act. And as a result, he wasn't only one of our great improvisers, but he was a sound innovator, which I think is really interesting.
Thank you.
I'd like to tell you about. Our most recent recording is called Love is a Pendulum, and it's based on a poem. Each verse of the five verses begins, you know, with a metaphor talking about love, its qualities, and possible ways to navigate through its difficulties. The verse that inspired this last song we're going to play for you, she compares love to a planchette. She says love is a planchette. I didn't know what a planchette was, so I had to Google it. And I discovered that a planchette, are you guys familiar with the spiritual game Ouija, the Ouija board? The planchette is the plastic pointer that you put your fingertips on. And this piece is not an occult or scary sounding piece, as you're going to hear. But what the poet Barbara Sraga meant by that was, in order for love to reveal its answers, you have to keep a light touch. If you press too hard, it's not going to take you from one place to the next and reveal its answers. So you need to keep a light touch on love. And I like that. Love is a planchette. So I'm going to play that for you. Thank you.
Alan Kosker on the drums. Alan Kosker. Daryl Hall on bass. Alessandro Di Liberto on piano. Thank you very much, Joe Locke. Thanks.
The Joe Locke Quartet ending their set with Love is a Planchette, and before that you heard Laura, recorded on the Jazz Lineup stage as part of the celebrations for the Glasgow Jazz Festival. And that's almost the end of this week's show. On next week's Jazz Lineup, a performance recorded at the Gateshead Jazz Festival by Pan Jumbie, a group blending the sound of steel drums with jazz. On Jazz Now, this week they have music from the Dave Holland Trio, featuring Stan Solzman and Nate Smith, plus a set featuring Holland's music with the Birmingham Conservatoire Big Band in the last ever jazz concert at Adrian Bolt Hall. And that's Monday night at 11. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Jazz Lineup was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. And if you'd like more information on Jazz Lineup, then go to the programme page on the Radio 3 website. And there's more jazz here on Radio 3 on Monday evening at 11 o'clock, when Jazz Now is presented by Soweto Kinch, who'll be introducing a concert by the Dave Holland Trio. And next Saturday afternoon, of course, there's more jazz record requests at 4 and then Jazz Lineup again at 5. This is Radio 3. In an hour from now, we're off to the proms for more than one tragic love affair.
When the young composer Hector Berlioz encountered the plays of Shakespeare, he was profoundly affected. And not only by the bard, he also fell for the actress who played Juliet, Harriet Smithson, whom he became obsessed with. Berlioz poured his passion for Harriet into a romantic choral symphony, Romeo and Juliet. John Elliott Gardner and the Orchestre Révolutionnaire et Romantique perform Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet at the BBC Proms tonight at 7:30.
6:30 now, and time on Radio 3 to hear an edition of the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping, which was recorded as part of Radio 3's Sounds of Shakespeare season that took place in April this year. The concert was given at the Guild Chapel in Stratford-upon-Avon by Ex Cathedra, who were conducted by Geoffrey Skidmore.
April is in my mistress' face, words by the Italian poet Livio Celiano, translated into English and set to music by Thomas Morley in 1594. It was sung there by the voices of Ex Cathedra, conducted by Geoffrey Skidmore as part of Radio 3's Sounds of Shakespeare weekend. And for the next hour or so, we're going to bask in some more of those glorious sounds here at the Guild